You're listening to this podcast on danceinisrael.com.
This is Deborah Friedis, and right now I'm sitting with Barak Marshall in a cafe in Tel Aviv, so you can get the real Tel Aviv Friday right before Shabbat experience. Barak, can you please say hi?
Hi.
Excellent. So I always like to start at the beginning, and I know you have a very interesting background in terms of where you've been raised and how you came to dance. So can you just tell me a little bit about your background?
Yes, I was born in Los Angeles to a Yemenite mother, American father. My mother is a dancer, choreographer, actress. She was the prima ballerina of the Inbal Dance Company for 15 years and then moved to the States where she met my dad. And I, just to sort of jump forward 24 years, I was born in 68. And in 1990, I guess, 4, I came here and I was working in the Inbal Dance Theater Company with my mother as an administrator. And my aunt died, and I was really quite upset and distraught, and I'd never danced before in my life. And we were very close, and she was 68. And during the Shiva, I would come back to the studio to Inbal and walk in the studio, put on some music, and I guess dance. I don't know what I was doing. I was just trying to sort of vent. And a friend of mine was watching me secretly for a week. She was in the company. My mother brought her from the English National Ballet and to Inbal. And at the end of the week, she came down and said, let me show you some movement. She showed me some movement. And I said, that's beautiful. She goes, it's your movement. Let's build a piece. And that's the first piece that I ever did. And that was a piece called Aunt Leia. So that's, in a nutshell, that's the beginning of both my life and dance.
It's a pretty terrific nutshell. So what kind of movement did you come up with when you were starting to experiment and, as you said, just vent?
Well, a lot of it just came off of, viscerally off my body. I mean, nothing was thought out. I started recalling the way she would move, the way her hands would move, the expressions she used with them. I mean, there was a conscious then, sort of, after the beginning of it, a conscious remembering that I went through in building the piece. But the movement was a mixture of very emotive, I'd say ethnic, very Yemenite influenced, but again, genetic, not conscious movement, and a lot of hand gestures from the Yemenite or Adonite tradition, where my mother's family's from. And there was live singing in the piece and a lot of Arabic text. So that was really, you know, starting. And the music I finally used was Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan. So the music itself was also very much ethnic, I guess local, one would say, music.
Can you describe a little bit of, how would you characterize the sort of ethnic and Yemenite movement? Are there words that you can use?
Well, it's hard to characterize because there was a definite, you know, there in Baal at its beginnings had, you know, something that was specifically Yemenite and ethnic, and then for many years the company unfortunately sort of went off, you know, had not been producing. So there's not exactly, at least in terms of contemporary dance, a lot of exploration of the ethnic movement. But I can talk about it in terms of Inbal in the beginning, and that was, you know, very, I think, almost Indian subcontinent, very highly articulate hands, very light feet, very grounded, I'd say almost an African plié, incredibly rhythmic body movements. That I would say is Inbal at its beginning, and that came from, you know, really straight folk dance from, you know, from the Dasa step or the Yemenite step. And so they developed it along with Jerome Robbins, Sahar Tanai, and it sort of brought it to the stage, contemporized it. And in terms of what I do, you know, I didn't grow up so much around Yemenite culture, although I grew up around a Yemenite artist who infused her contemporary work with a lot of ethnic themes. So for me, I would say the way that I look at my movement or my version of Yemenite movement, it's highly pedestrian, highly gestural, and I try to look at every movement as a word. I try.
So where did you go from there after making that first work? What was your impetus for the second work, and did you turn to the studio more to learn more about dance at that point?
Well, actually, I turned to literature, and I turned to the writings of, you know, living in Israel is a bit of a shock to the system, especially for an American, and so it, you know, trying to figure this place out, and you become a little bitter pretty fast.
I haven't yet, but I'm sure it'll come
in the next hour or two. But But I remembered a short story that I'd read a long time ago called The Land of Sad Oranges, and it was by a Palestinian writer called Ghassan Kanafani, who I really loved. And he was a top member of the PFLP, the Progressive Front for the Liberation of Palestine, and he was killed in a car bomb in 1972, probably by the Israelis, probably by us. And but his stories were really dense and very vivid, and so I took this idea of a country, a country that eats its citizens, its inhabitants, and really dealt with, or tried to at least, I don't think it was fully successful, tried to deal with more political issues, The music, again, was very ethnic. I used a lot of Senegalese drums, and I used my mother in the piece, doing a lot of Arabic text and Hebrew text. And then I also started trying to investigate more sophisticated Middle Eastern music and kind of fell upon Romanian gypsy music, so I used that as well. But so, the next step for me was trying to actually make a larger statement, not just a personal statement. That was the second piece that I did.
What was the name of that piece?
The Land of Sad Oranges.
Okay. And then I actually got to see Aunt Leah when it was restaged.
Oh.
Yes, here.
Oh, God.
So, For me, it's great because it's hard to find records of these things. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe there is one
there
in the Dance
some
Library
very, very
of Israel.
Rainy videos.
Yeah, it gives me a sense of where you've come from, and it's wonderful for me. I also saw at some point, I think in the Dance Library of Israel, some clips of Emma Goldman's wedding.
Emma Goldman's wedding,
That, when did you make that, and can
that
you
was
talk
a
little
year,
bit?
Yeah, that was a year later, and again, I think I was sort of dealing with Israeli society and this sort of the fight, and I think there's a lot of fighting or themes of oppression in my piece. No, I don't think consciously. I just think that just what comes out of this space, this country, this place, and maybe me. And Emma Goldman's wedding was started off from really falling in love with klezmer music. So the departure point for it was discovering, some new. The new Jew bands of klezmer in New York, like the Klezmatics, and there's some New Orleans, klezmer, very, very wild, John Zorn, Jewish-themed and reinvestigations of Jewish music that just really hit me viscerally. And so I kind of fell into the Ashkenazi side or the Eastern, the European Jewish side of my background and started using a lot of investigating that. And then Emma Goldman as a figure always fascinated me. Started basically trying to formulate a story around a wedding that never happened, and dealt with female issues, women's issues as well, a lot of themes of that. Again, I used my mother in this piece, like I've done in many of my pieces, as a sort of Greek chorus, observing, commenting on the action, comic relief. She's also good for transitions. So that was that, and the movement there was, I think, very... influenced by big band.
Like swing type.
Swing, yeah. Sorry, forgetting the term swing. So yeah, there's that. And then again, starting much more to use my hands in that piece, I think, than just the body. I think that from Aunt Leah to there, I really made a conscious effort to start investigating the hands as a part of the dancer's body.
Which is something that I think most contemporary dance doesn't necessarily get into.
No, not at all. But I think then again, it's also this major split. I mean, postmodernism and what it did to sort of form. I think, especially now, no. I think most dance now is emotive, and I don't think there's a real attention to the dancers as individuals, but more as a corps de ballet, as props on stage,
yeah.
Which I don't like, personally. But, it's economically efficient,
mm-hmm. Right.
It's a lot of work when when you're working on your hands, mm-hmm. and even your fingers and your eyes. It's a lot of work. It's labor intensive. So a lot of people shy away from it. And I also think that especially in Israel, there's really a massive denial of geographical truth. Meaning we don't. Most choreographers here do not look to the cultures that they're around them, the cultures they come from, nor where they're living. So. There's a desire to be European,
mm-hmm.
and that also is not a European. The hands are not part of the European aesthetic.
Right. So. But here in Israel, everyone is talking all the time with their hands.
Right.
Of course, I'm doing it, and the microphone's not picking it up, but yeah.
I'm too tired. I just can't lift my hands on the table, but I would do it otherwise. I mean, yeah, people are very animated, but isn't it interesting when you see that animation in most pieces here? I don't. Like,
yeah,
I don't deserve.
Neither do I.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a much more, let's use the body, and the segments of the body are larger. It's the arms or the legs or the torso.
Their extensions are maybe echoes, but they're not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a very interesting thing that I notice as an outsider also, because that's kind of what I am here too, even though I lived here for a long time. But, that's important to me.
I'm like, I actually had an Ulpan exam yesterday. So
after
international exposure, it was study, and then...
I went through Ulpan too, so...
Yeah, you did. Because you're very fluent when I hear you.
No, I'm pretty fluent, but I used to be much more fluent. I studied on an Ulpan. I didn't speak Hebrew growing up. You know?
Really?
Yeah, I came here to reclaim who I was at 18. So I kind of go, oh, my name's Barak.
What does that mean?
What does that mean? Yeah, lightning.
Lightning. That's
and
right.
It means, and it's also grew up in West LA, and that name with a mother who was a strange fish, you know, strange bird. So 18 was important for me to come and sort of go, okay, I get who I am, partially at least now.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Now, with the language, so you said that you didn't really speak Hebrew growing up.
I didn't at all.
But then you came and you did Ulpan, and now I hear you speaking in it. Yeah. What about Arabic? Because you've mentioned that you have drawn on a lot of Arabic texts. Do you have a connection to that language?
Well, my mother's Yemenite, so her first language and my language that my grandmother only spoke was Arabic, you know, and so... It's a lot of the traditions, the songs, especially women's songs, are all in almost pure Arabic or Judeo-Arabic, you know, sort of the Arabic version of the Oriental version of Ladino of sorts. But I mean, yeah, I have a very strong connection through the music. I grew up also coming to Israel every summer, so my aunts would always bless me in Arabic or curse me in Arabic, you know.
Hopefully blessing more than cursing.
No, much more cursing. But that's just the Yemenite way. So, you know, yeah, I have a very strong connection to it. Culturally, I don't speak a lot at all. It's the next language I need to learn. And it's a very rich, beautiful language. And I sing in Arabic. I do sing. I sing in Yemenite Arabic. So don't know exactly, which I know what I'm saying, but it's not an easy dialect.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about how you progressed as a choreographer here in Israel, who you were working with when you had your own company and also when you worked with Bat Sheva?
Yeah, I mean, I came at a very fortunate time in Israel. I think there was Bat Sheva, obviously. You know, Hadi just come here, and it was 4 years, I think, after he arrived. So he was a massive force here to reckon with, and as a result, I think most Israeli choreographers here, you know, either you did one of two things. Either you succumbed to it and you imitated, which a lot did, or you really fought very hard to define your own artistic voice. And I think there were a lot of people working then that did succeed in that. Like Nir Viliat, you know, Nir Miguel in the Drawer, Noah Dal, Anna Danieli, Noah Nadie Wertheim.
Okay, so some of the people who really define their voices
did in the shadow or in spite of Bat Sheva. And so I was very, you know, I just started to in Mapinto also, obviously. So when I started here, I started, you know, anyway, we're talking about voices, but you asked about who I worked with. I started with Inbal dancers in the Inbal Dance Company, which under my mother was quite phenomenal.
Which I just want to clarify, because I'm sure some people who aren't as familiar with the scene might get that confused with Inbal Pinto, but the Inbal that you're talking about is the Inbal dance theater, the Yemenite.
Yes, the Yemenite and
Yemenite influence.
Yemenite influence, I'd say that, yeah.
Yemenite contemporary,
I'd say, yeah.
Okay.
And so my mother was the prima ballerina of that company and then the artistic director in 1994. And so I worked originally with Inbal dancers and built Aunt Leia, my first piece. And then I left that company in 1995 and started working with dancers in the freelance world. And then was invited by Nomi Perlov, who was the co-artistic director of the Bat Sheva Ensemble, to start working with the ensemble. So I started developing a lot of Emma Goldman's Wedding or The Land of Sad Oranges, all my bigger pieces on the ensemble, which, coming back here, is one of the biggest, I think, shames of the Israeli dance world, that company's not open, no longer open to help young choreographers develop from the dance world. And so
right, you know, now they're only doing Ohad's work and also a bit of Sharon Ayal.
And then they sort of pay lip service to developing young choreographers by you know, giving
within the company.
Within the company, but you know, it's. Anyway, I can comment on, I'd like to comment on that later because I think it's a very important thing that needs to be said without being overly critical. But talk about this. So I started again with this freelance company, freelance world, dancers, just auditioning, meeting people through that, and then built a cast for my second piece. Part of that cast carried on to my third piece, and most of the cast was actually ex-Batsheva dancers. A lot of ex-Batsheva dancers. Amit Inyara, for example. Uh-huh. Sarah Zimi. Imbal Pinto was in Aunt Leah originally. I also performed in... She was in my second piece. I was in Atouf, in Rapt.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really a mixture of, you know, people... Also, dancers that I taught in high school, so I started taking the company. So that was the beginning of it. And then I had my company together, I'd say, what, from 94, 95 to 99. And then in 99, after... We won the Bagnolet Prize in 98, the Bagnolet competition. And we toured. It was a very, very important dance competition. It happened every 2 years. I think several thousand choreographers from around the world applied, and they took 16. And that gave you a subsidy for a tour. So we had a pretty
fantastic,
great tour in Europe for a couple of years. Imbal Pinto and I split the bill for many of the shows. But then we had our own evenings as well that we performed you know, throughout France and Germany and all over Europe and the States. And then in 99, Ohad invited me to become the house choreographer for the Batsheva Dance Company and the ensemble. So I was so exhausted by running my own company that I before he asked the question, I said yes. So
fantastic. Yeah,
so that's the kind of the grand scheme of the people that I work with. Then, and this company is a pickup company now for Monger. It's auditioned about 200, up to now, maybe 220 dancers at least.
Wow.
For it, and there's a cast of 10.
It's impressive. I remember seeing, I think I saw the audition notice for it. And I was very curious. It was right before I was going out of town, and I wondered, I thought, oh, great, well, I'll come back and I'll finally get to see some of your work. And it's great that so many people showed up to try it.
Yeah, I was overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And the level here has just skyrocketed. In terms of the freelance,
yeah,
it's unbelievable what's happened here. Truly, just it's exponentially leaping forward.
Absolutely. One thing I feel, and I think this is part of why maybe I've been so attracted to it here, is that regardless of whether or not I end up liking a work, I tend to enjoy the dancers. I feel that they're very, very strong performers.
Right.
Very, very committed.
Absolutely.
And I find that I end up really enjoying watching them, even if I find flaws with a piece or if it's not my aesthetic.
Yeah, no, I enjoy... I just culturally, for whatever reason, maybe because I started here, or I just feel an ease at working with Israeli dancers much more so. I've worked in Turkey, I've worked in Austria, the United States, London. I did a work in London, did a work in Filadenko, also in Philadelphia, and American Dance Festival, and I find it much easier working with Israeli dancers, much easier.
Do you think there's something different in their physicality or in their approach?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that it's a culture you see on the street here, which is a culture that they can bring into the studio, which is amazing. It's schizophrenic. It's bipolar. It's highly, you know, every chakra is about to be, you know, snapped, you know, is open. They're just balls of emotional confusion and power. And I love that they're just a broad. That sounds so wrong. I just tried to throw everything in the kitchen sink into that description. But there's such a spectrum of emotion, you know, that you don't really get anywhere else. You might get it in Spain a little bit too, I would say, but it's different.
Yeah, I've heard some comparisons in some way between more Spanish dancers. Between more Spanish dancers and Israeli.
And yet it's different, you know. There's a neuroses, I think, that Israeli dancers bring to the stage, which I like. Just Jewish neuroses.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Do you think that in turn, the character of the dancers here, do you think that affects the work that's being made, whether it's your work or someone else's?
Oh, it has to. I mean, it obviously has to. Either you embrace it or you deny it, but of course it affects it. I mean, these are people who are coming off of this street, in this city, or in this country, and with all of its tension and craziness and sorrow and happiness, and yeah, it comes into the studio. It's not like there's a filter at the door, but there are some choreographers who do embrace it, and some who don't. I mean, I like to embrace it, you know. I want to channel it into, you know, a focus, a sharp focus. Mm-hmm. So,
all right. Actually, I guess this is somewhat of a link to that conversation that we were just having, or to the question I just asked. Mm-hmm. Which, what differences do you see between the works of American choreographers versus Israeli choreographers?
It's a hard thing to sort of comment on American choreography now, only for two reasons. I haven't seen a lot, you know, and also there isn't a lot, you know, so it's two things. There's not a lot of new... We have a real problem in the States. There's simply no funding. And, you know, I remember I was touring with my mother's company since I was a kid, so I remember when the budget was cut for the NEA. 1980, Reagan, you know, gone. You know, there was the NEA four, the four artists that basically, you know, irked all the conservative ire, and it was gone, you know? So we don't have enough funding to really have developed a ton of high-level work in the States, and therefore the comparison isn't really easy to make. I do think, I mean, so having disclaimed, and I think that Americans work much more from technique, but I think that American dance... The little that I've seen sort of got frozen in the 1980s. Not sort of, it got frozen in the 1980s. So, I mean, I hear there's some great choreographers around, like Azure Barton, and I remember seeing some work by Nicholas Leichter that I loved, and there's some, obviously, you know, there is just probably a ton of fringe, small work that's just, you know, as brilliant as any other place. But it doesn't have the support. You know, it's dominated by the museum companies, because any company that had funding... When all the NEA budget was cut, stuck, and so you have these real, you know, old companies that are under the control of one choreographer. So mm-hmm.
And they've,
you know,
locked in the funding.
No, yeah, they've locked in the funding. And thankfully, right now, I think that the biggest hope for, you know, changing and shifting the American dance scene is Cedar Lake. You know, because it's a repertory company. Thank God, mm-hmm. with bringing in has enough money to bring in great choreographers to try to shake things up. But if you don't have funding in the dance world, you're not going to have it. But I'll go back to the question, which is, what is the difference? I think that American choreographers, for the most part, from what I've seen, don't see an importance in developing unique language. They use technique almost one-to-one. I don't think there's a difference between the movement you see in a class and the movement you see on stage. Mm-hmm. That makes sense? I mean...
Yeah. I mean, as you were saying... Before the coffee machine cut us up, that they're working more from technique.
Yeah.
And so it's from an established technique.
Yeah. So you can recognize Cunningham or Limon or, you know, or Release or, you know, and it becomes the language and not the method of strengthening dancers.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No, I think that does make sense because we don't, I think there was a time that was true here. From what I've understood about the history, there was an era where Israeli choreographers were pretty much using Gram technique as their basis.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, it looked very much like Gram work on stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's also true now with Ohad. I mean, I think that a lot of, or Ohad of maybe pre 2000, I'd say, sort of older Ohad, where, you know, baby hands and the shift, the Tai Chi shifting and two hands up. And mm-hmm. There's a lot of sort of stunts or a lot of sort of. Positions that are typical Ohad that also, it's not technique, but it's imitation, and mm-hmm. that's imitation
right.
of suicide, isn't it? Emerson said so. Yeah, so again, it kills a lot of work.
Actually, when you were working with Batsheva, how much Gaga were they doing, and how did that do you feel that affected your creative process with them?
You know, they were doing class with Ohad, they also had a lot more ballet when I was working with them, and it was a different company. I think that. It was just a different company. These were people who had actually had gone through repertoire, had done repertoire of non-Ohad repertoire. So most of these people, even if they were in the ensemble from like Adi Salant or Inbal Yaakobi, they were in the ensemble when it had other choreographers working with them. Or at least they were experiencing Anjana Prajlokaj and Forsyth and the young Israeli choreographers that were working with them constantly, which was, you know, again, a shame that it's not happening. So there was a variety of languages that they were experiencing on their body, which allowed each person to become more unique as a dancer and distinguishable not just by body type, but by expression. So, you know, that sounds maybe overly critical, and I don't mean it to be at all, but it's just a different aesthetic now, you know. When I was working with them also, I was working in my language, and I obviously had to really try. I think it took a lot from Ohad. I'm sure I'm very influenced by him, but my language is different. So my main focus was really trying to conserve the language, develop it.
Yeah. Cool. And I do see a difference. I mean, your work is, for me, from what I've seen, very distinguishable as your work. I don't think I would ever mistake it for his.
Yeah.
Or for...
Well, a lot of that was... I mean, I don't think I have the faculties in my body to be able to do a hot movement. But beyond that, even when I was working with dancers, I don't work off of improvisation because it's... Then you're not really developing your own language. So, you know, you're not developing... So I had to really, at the beginning, especially, prevent my dancers from improvising because it would just come out of hot, you know. It would just be maybe a little more, you know, kind of a dirty ohad, you know, kind of more sexual ohad. It became this sort of feel yourself thing, but I really tried very hard to keep it out. I mean, there are definitely movements that I recognize that I have either consciously or unconsciously taken. A few.
Of course. I think it's impossible.
Three. No, seriously, I know how many I've taken, and I really feel guilty about it.
So you could show them to me right now.
Yeah, I'll show them to you right now. You'll know exactly where they're from. I know the pieces I took them from, too.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
Shall we take a pause?
Yes.
Take a pause.
Yes.
For more podcasts and articles about dance in Israel, please visit danceinisrael.com.